Welcome to Multiculturalism Happens Here. I am Isaac Ruelas, and I work with Visions Inc., a nonprofit established in 1984. We are a catalyst for a more equitable world, where differences are valued and used for the benefit of all. Our goal is to be a resource to the people that are working hard every day to bring multiculturalism, diversity, equity, inclusion to their workplaces, churches, governments, schools, believing that the multiculturalism process of change can be a part of your journey in the success of pluralism. Hello, welcome to another episode of Multiculturalism Happens Here. I'm so excited for today's episode. I'm going to be talking with another one of Vision's emerging consultants, Jabari Brown. We will be talking about the cooperative process and what it means to stay in the process of building a multicultural community. And so without further ado, welcome Jabari. I'm going to allow for you to introduce yourself. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your social location, any cultural or ethnic identities that you have, and anything else that comes up for you?
Cool. My name is Jabari, and I am a Southerner. I grew up in rural Mississippi, and for the last 8 years or so, I've lived in New Orleans, which is further south than where I grew up. I am a Black person or African American. That piece of the social location is blurry and inherent in my folks, like bondage and tied up in the history of how we first come to know America. As home, I should say, at least. But yeah, I identify as a Black person or African American. I'm also a man, cis man. And yeah, so I think those are the pieces of my identity I gravitate to most, as being a person that grew up in a rural space and being Black. More, what's been funny is more recently I've identified with being an explorer. And that's terminology is new for me and seeing myself through that lens. However, I feel like the notion or the idea of it is something that has been true for a very long time for me. So that's where I sit.
Thank you for sharing that with us. And I want to start off our conversation by asking you, how is it that you re-engage a conversation? A part of the cooperative process that we talk about at Visions is about having a way to have courageous conversations. And so I want to ask you, how do you re-engage a conversation where there was a multicultural miss? And how do you set up to have a courageous conversation? A simple example would be if I'm having a meeting with somebody and they say something, let's say that they happen to be white, and they say something that has a racist impact on me, but I don't feel like I'm prepared or ready to have the conversation there. Say I go home and I think about it some more and I think to myself that this is a conversation worth having. And so I want to set myself up to be in the cooperative process, to have a courageous conversation with this person. And this is what I refer to as like the re-engage. And so how do you re-engage a conversation after there was a multicultural miss? Or a personal ouch, a negative impact, something of that sort.
Gotcha. I follow you. Well, I don't think there's a very clear, dry answer for that. And I think for me, when I feel that there's been a miss that I don't address right away, oftentimes there's a reason why I might not do that. You know, oftentimes I'm in a one-down position. You know, maybe that person, as you just explained, was my boss, or maybe that person makes more than me or has a higher degree or whatever, whatever, like whatever the situation might be. Because I think oftentimes in our, like when we are in our positions of power or non-target identities, those conversations are likely easier to happen for me, I should say, when I'm in that position, as opposed to being in a one down position. So with that in mind, I think it's like, what is it that I need? I feel like it's best to check in with me to figure out what is it that I need from the situation, because maybe I just need to share a resentment with that person. It's like, yo, like this thing you did made me feel this way. I don't really want to have a conversation. Like, that's it. And maybe, you know, I work really closely with this person, or I have a a deep relationship with this person where I actually need to have a conversation. So I feel like knowing what I want the end to be before I go in or have some idea where I want it to go is more important. It allows me to engage the conversation easier if I have a roadmap, so to speak. So once I have that roadmap, depending on my relationship to the person and where I see it going, that gives me, I feel empowered because, cool, I can do this. I just need to have a conversation. So I think it's, for me, like, I need to have a conversation with somebody I'm thinking right now. And I am going to work with this person again really soon. So for me, I'm like, cool, I need to have this conversation before I work again with this person because further damage could happen. I don't want to carry this feeling of unsettledness into my work. And also, I don't want the relationship to continue to suffer from a conversation that we could have. So I'm going to, and this is, again, a person that I feel really close with. I'm like, yo, like, can we clear the air? Or can I check out an assumption? When I heard you say X, like, that made me feel this way. Or share the impact for me using feeling words. And in doing it that way, it's like the person can say, well, that's bullshit. That did, like, that's not what I meant. And that's stupid that you believe that. And the thing where I went into conversation with, I need to make my feelings known. Because I feel mad, sad, or scared about something. Once I made my feelings known, the other person can accept, deny, or like reject it altogether. But I still have done my personal work. You know what I mean? And if the person chooses not to engage, I can't like force them to. It's like, all right, cool. Like, that's as far as we can get right now. Like, that's how you feel, and that's okay. However, I expect that my conversation will be welcome. And my hope is to come up with solutions so that we don't find ourselves in this situation again. Like what it is we could do.
So we're talking about the cooperative process, about having these courageous conversations, using our communication guidelines. I heard you using I statements, getting into feelings as messengers. And I want to talk about one of the cooperative process moments that we've had the opportunity to share. And so one of the last times that we were physically together for some work was in Boston. Yeah, was in Boston. And we had a just very kind of short amount of time together at the end from where we were working on our way to the airport. And during that time together, I felt like I said something that was anti-Black. And it was very quick. I did not have a lot of time to really engage in a conversation with you because we didn't have a lot of time together. And what I said was I was referring to somebody acting Black. And I just remember going home and thinking to myself, why did I say that? What did I mean? What was I trying to do? I heard you talking about the one up and one down. Was I trying to one up myself or one down somebody else? And just what that means in terms of the cultural scripts around white supremacy and the things that I caught and the ways that I play into anti-Blackness. And so we were able to have a conversation about that moment specifically about a month after that, where we were able to jump into the cooperative process and engage that conversation that we had.
Yeah, I believe we have to be like patient with ourselves, but not complacent. You know, so we are all on this journey of learning, and particularly with our differences, because the thing, like, society has used our differences to alienate us and put us in different boxes. So I think that it's on, like, Homo sapiens being communal beings, like, we have to be in relationship with one another for learning to happen, play, and different things like that. So I just want to say that to grant yourself a little grace there and also call it in the guideline, no blame, shame, or judgment. And now that we are intentionally being in community together, like me and you, for example, in the work that we're doing, like these moments of learning are going to come, you know, so just not to like beat yourself up about that. And I also appreciate the invitation to like be a part of the conversation and so on. I think that that thing, like the danger of a single story, you remember that video that we've seen like multiple times?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Like, what I heard you say was like, shit, I didn't know that was in me too. You know what I mean? Like that I had this single story that came out in this way that I didn't expect it to, you know? Especially being that I'm already engaged in this work. This is my life's work. Like, what the hell? I'm supposed to be exempt from shit like that. That's not true. That's just not true. That's not true. So yeah. But for me, I think, you know, and we talked a little bit more about this and just to, I guess, muddy the water a little bit more. Cultures are different, right? And there are some things that are specific to Black culture that exist for, like, Black culture only. And the specific culture that you're a part, like indigenous culture or queer culture, thinking about music, like, that just is a difference. And so the goal is to acknowledge the difference and to not think of another person as less than because of the difference that they have. And so this notion of this person, like, acting Black, like, I can't think of what the exact behavior was now. Like, that, like, yes, and there might be some truth to that, you know? And I also hear your reluctancy in that, like, you don't actually, like, live, like, you're not a Black person. So for you to say that, it means something different for you to say that than for me to say that. You know, like, it's literally like a both and, like, being able to finesse that. And it is definitely not easy. And, like, the path that I think is ahead of us all in one way or another, being able to, like, live together and be offended and create, you know, opportunities for redemption and like, progress. Because if the notion is that we're not going to be hurt and we're going to do this work, like, pain-free or whatever, I think that's not true either. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, where, like, given the learning or the experience that you had, like, how has that impacted how you've moved forward, you know, in similar situations?
Yeah, that's a good question. I appreciate you asking that. What comes up for me right away would actually be going back to what you said earlier, which was the danger of a single story. And I think that the way that white supremacy works sometimes within myself is that the path of least resistance is to jump into this single story, especially if it's something that's other than me. And if it's something that's other than me and something that society or culture say is less than it's even easier to jump to that single story. And so what I'm trying to do or what I'm doing is growing in my awareness of when I am kind of jumping into the unconscious automatic response of having that narrative of a single story. And as I become aware that I am putting someone or that I am perceiving someone through this single story narrative, to remind myself that no, you know, there is more to the story, that people have multiple identities, that actually by using a single narrative, I am othering somebody, and that I don't want to do that. That's not a part of my intention. And so I want to be aware and conscious of the perspectives and narratives that I have, that I'm creating, and that I'm building on a daily basis, especially when it comes to differences. And, you know, I wonder, going back to our original conversation, if when I was, or when I said, oh, they're acting Black, how was I putting them into that single story? And was I taking away their nuances, their humanity, by saying, oh, no, wait, they're this single narrative of Black, which is the narrative that I was taught from a culture of white supremacy? And was I doing a one up, one down?
Gotcha. I got you.
Right when I said that, was I trying to put them in a one down position so that maybe I could feel more powerful?
The thing that I remember from that was, like, like, when you thought about it, I feel like the thing you were saying is, like, they were trying to be somebody that they were not. Like, they're acting Black when, like, that's not truthfully, like, who they are.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to be something more. That's how I understand. And this is the discussion afterwards, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's how I heard it from you.
Yeah. Yeah, I really agree with you. And as I reflect more, I can see the scripts, or I can begin to recognize the scripts more clearly around white supremacy and how I bought in and how I live it out. You know, how it really lives the way that I feel that single story. And then that's the thinking part. And then the behaving by one up, one down, othering.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm playing into the game of white supremacy and really playing the role. And it's wild how fast it happens.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, like, oppression is that, like, for entrance into the oppression game, you have to agree to play the game. Yeah. And so that doesn't mean that I say, yes, I want to play the oppression game. And it also means that I've learned that black people are this way and white people are this way. And that's, in quote, a truth. And so that gives me permission to, when I'm in a position with somebody that has a difference than me, that I'm perceived as being better than, that I can play the game from a different position. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to be in the one down position. So it's always, how can I live in my one up position? You know, because it's a more powerful position, like the benefits that go along with it, why not? You know? So I think it's very easy for people of color to play this game with other people of color, to play this game with other folks that are, you know, oppressed communities, because we've learned to play the game so well from white folks for survival that it's often second nature. Like, it's second nature to play the game when I'm in my one-up position, because I've seen it happen so many times. Yeah. And, you know, I would argue if you thought long enough, you would be like, oh, shit. I mean, this is where I learned this from. Like, this is how I learned to get ahead, you know? Yeah. Like, this individualistic sort of way that doesn't consider others, or considers himself more than others, you know?
Oh man, that's a great way of saying that. Yeah. It was so fast, so subconscious. I really appreciate getting to have this conversation with you again and hearing your perspective and the way that you're able to frame things.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely is not only a personal story, but I think many folks will be able to relate to this idea of finding ourselves believing, which I think, you know, just because it like was said, you know, out loud, which allowed the entire interact be something that brought it from your subconscious to your conscious, you know? So in this idea of like things being said and not being said, I think the goal is to, like, be aware of it, right? Because I can't stop myself from having these, like, for example, like, sexist thoughts. I have to re-educate myself. And the education that I've had 30 years in life has said one thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going through this process of literally re-educating myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I have to learn this new way of being. You know, there are oftentimes not very clear pathways about how to do it, because the system as it currently works depends on one person being down. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm creating the map and having to commit to the path that I'm going on this map without, you know, while giving up this thing, in quote, that was working so well for me. In my one opposition.
So much wisdom. Thank you, Jabari Brown, for being with us once again. I appreciate your perspective, your voice, your diligence, your care. You are a true explorer, and I am very grateful to have you also be my friend and colleague. I know that you have to go, so is there any last words of wisdom that you would like to leave us with?
Well, I think I'll take a note from your book, which is just because it's over with doesn't mean it's done with. So this conversation began months ago, and it's something that we're still having to revisit to continue to unpack, like, what's there, right? And so, like, this is a part of all of our work. You know, this, in this microscopic way, is your example that you brought, But, you know, I could plug myself in there. Anybody who's listening can plug themselves in there. So, you know, again, like that, this is the work, like being aware of it. Like now I see it. Now I can interrupt it when it happens. I can replace that thought with a different thought. The notion is not to just be like, all right, cool. Like, you know, that thing happened. I'll move forward past. I'm just going to do right next time. But I really appreciate the process that you are moving through with continuing to revisit and revisit and revisit. I think one, just like deepen your understanding of yourself and also, you know, where this learning might come from, which is the challenge and work that an individual can choose to do or choose not to do. And I'm fortunate that I have friends that are choosing to do that work.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Multiculturalism Happens Here. If you found this helpful, resourceful, give us a like, subscribe, share, or positive review. Consider giving to Visions, link down below, or joining us for one of our workshops, trainings, or youth summits. Interested in having us come to you? Contact us for more info. Keep rocking the free world, stay you, and be different. Much love, family.